There have been big-name prosecutions that she has led and is leading now that under most circumstances would be the kind of feather in one's cap that could propel an ambitious would-be politician to greater heights. For example, it was Ortiz's office that put notorious fugitive gangster Whitey Bulger away, and she's leading the prosecution of suspected Marathon bomber Zohar Tzarnaev.
Today's charges reflect the serious and violent nature of the events that occurred on April 15th and the tragic series of events that followed.
But questions have been raised about Ortiz's decision to cooperate with the British government to gain legal access to Boston College's interviews with former Irish Republican Army members. Archival voices in that collection include that of IRA member Dolores Price, who died in 2013. 2 years before she passed, the U.S. attorney subpoenaed B.C. for Price's interviews, though that information, purportedly linking the IRA and its leaders to multiple murders, was supposed to be kept confidential until her death. Ortiz's critics say that her relentless pursuit of information from Price while she was alive went too far. That same year, 2011, Ortiz's office pursued federal charges on behalf of MIT against a talented computer programmer named Aaron Swartz.
Both Dolores Price and Aaron Swartz died within weeks of each other. The stress of the case that was taken against them really took a toll on their mental health.
Carrie Toomey, the wife of Anthony McIntyre, the principal researcher at BC's Oral History Project, told WGBH that Ortiz's decision to pursue separate federal charges against both Swartz and Price may have contributed to their tragic fates.
And Carmen Ortiz's office was aware, made aware, in both cases, that the people she was pursuing, Dolores and for the archives, and Aaron Swartz for the MIT aspect, were vulnerable people.
Speaking with WGBH Radio from her home in County Louth, Ireland, Toomey says that Boston College and MIT were faced with two fundamental questions.
Do they cooperate with the authorities and compromise their research or compromise their academic freedom, or do they protect what they are supposed to be bulwarks for?
It was 2 years ago that Anthony McIntyre and journalist Ed Maloney argued before the first federal court of appeals in Boston that the U.S. attorney's decision to issue subpoenas to force B.C. to divulge details from the Oral History Project would put their lives in danger. In court, Carmen Ortiz's office pushed back, represented by Assistant U.S. Attorney Barbara Healy Smith.
Mr. Maloney, who is here and a U.S. citizen, asserted no risk to his personal safety. The personal safety of Mr. McIntyre, our Constitution does not protect non-citizens outside of the country from unnamed third parties who might bring them harm.
The court sided with Boston's U.S. attorney, but that wasn't the end of the matter. Christina Sterling, a senior spokesperson for the office of U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz, responded to this story with a carefully worded statement.
This matter was litigated up through the United States Supreme Court, and at each stage, the courts found our actions consistent with our treaty obligations and otherwise in compliance with U.S. law.
But Ed Maloney, the author of a major history of the IRA and on whose work the Oral History Project at BC is based, says that Ortiz and the DOJ should never have sought confidential files from BC in the first place because, he argues, the details about IRA disappearances and the purported role of Jerry Adams came from another source, despite claims to the contrary by a Sunday tabloid in Ireland.
That claim was repeated by Carmen Ortiz in her affidavit to the district court in Boston in the autumn of 2011 when court proceedings started. And my allegation is that this claim by Carmen Ortiz was made without any attempt to exercise due diligence on the part of the Department of Justice.
Boston College was issued subpoenas through U.S. Attorney Ortiz's office on behalf of the police services of Northern Ireland. Now, the basis for the subpoenas was what is known as a mutual legal assistance treaty. And with that, B.C. spokesman Jack Dunn says Ortiz gave Boston College little choice but to comply.
I suspect she's doing her job, but we do think that special privilege should be given to academic research, because if people feel they can't tell their oral history stories out of fear of government involvement, no one will ever tell these stories.
A chilling effect is the phrase some have used to describe the fallout from the Boston College case. It's the same phrase many of Aaron Swartz's supporters have employed to describe the impact of U.S. Attorney Ortiz's decision to prosecute the young hacker, who had used his computer skills to download a massive trove of academic articles from MIT's computer network, JSTOR.
I felt growing up, I slowly had this process of realizing that all the things around me that people had told me were just the natural way things were, the way things always would be.
The voice of Aaron Swartz.
They weren't natural at all. They were things that could be changed, and they were things that, more importantly, were wrong and should change. And once I realized that, there was really kind of no going back.
Federal prosecutors, in response to the MIT breach, filed charges that could have landed him in prison for 35 years and $1 million in fines. He took his life in New York after the indictment came down.
Aaron Swartz was prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Massachusetts for allegedly breaking into the computer networks at MIT. He was charged with crimes that would have carried a penalty of up to 35 years in prison and a $1 million fine, raising questions of prosecutorial zeal and, I would say, even misconduct. Have you looked into that particular
An excerpt matter? From the new Sundance documentary about internet activist Aaron Swartz. It premiered at Sundance in recent weeks, and the upcoming theatrical release threatens to resurrect negative public opinion about the role of U.S. prosecutors in Boston. Swartz's family specifically blamed MIT and the office of Carmen Ortiz for his death. Harvard Law professor Larry Lessig was Swartz's friend and mentor.
If Aaron had been Goldman Sachs, it would have been handled in a much different way. I mean, one of the most striking things about the prosecution is to recognize the way in which the opportunity here to exploit this relatively young, not corporately connected individual becomes almost irresistible for the prosecutors. And every effort to kind of check it and to insert reasonableness or proportionality into the process gets resisted and instead results in more extreme efforts by the prosecutor.
Carmen Ortiz has not spoken publicly about the Swartz case, nor the Boston University Oral History Project. Indeed, many U.S. attorneys often cannot speak for themselves for fear of jeopardizing legal proceedings and sometimes torpedoing political ambitions. So Christina Sterling, the spokesperson for the Boston U.S. Attorney's Office, read an exclusive statement to WGBH on Ortiz's behalf.
So for starters, U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz has made it clear many times that she does not have political aspirations. She has been and continues to be solely focused on her job as United States Attorney. Carmen, like her predecessors, makes very difficult decisions every day, and those decisions oftentimes resonate widely in our own community and across the nation, for that matter. For all the praise she has received for investigating and prosecuting public corruption, terrorism, and organized crime cases, there will always be criticism. It comes with the job.
And Jack Dunn of Boston College sympathizes with what one observer describes as Carmen Ortiz's between a rock and a hard place position in regard to federal prosecutorial decisions that often emanate from Washington and the kind of negative fallout that would put a nail in the coffin of political ambitions anywhere.
I don't know if people are particularly passing their blame to Carmen Ortiz. In fairness to her, I suspect she felt she had a job to do. So things might have been done differently, but that's the beauty of hindsight.
But others are not so sympathetic, and U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz says she will have to live with that. It comes with the job. Philip Martin, WGBH Boston Public Radio.